This is the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media. Now, here's Jason Jones.
Aloha, everybody, and welcome to the Jason Jones Show. I am your host, Jason Jones, broadcasting from beautiful Waikiki Beach, which is fitting because today is a Hawaii special, part of our 49 days in a row. That's R-O-E / R-O-W. You get that? It's a play on words. I'm challenging myself to do 49 days in a row, touching on the abortion issue for 49 days. That doesn't mean every show is going to be all about abortion. Today is not going to be all about abortion. Tomorrow's show will be. We're going to have a comprehensive interview with Father Frank Pavone. But I wanted to kick off at the beginning of this 49 days in a row, a conversation about Hawaii. And that's what we're going to do today with two great interviews. And why is that? Because as a 17-year-old boy, I started going door to door in Wahiwa on the island of Oahu, right outside of Schofield Barracks, knocking on doors, and I would say to people through the screen door, excuse me, sir, do you know abortion's legal? And they would look through the screen door and go, "Bombay holy boy, go away." That's what they would say to me. And I'd say, no, we got to have a talk here. They'd come out and talk. They would agree with me that children should be protected from violence. And that's how it all began. So that's how we're going to begin here. Do you know that in 1991, my captain heard I was knocking on doors. Said, "Specialist Jones, I hear you're harassing civilians about abortion. You think that's a good idea?" I said, "Well, sir, I'm going to end abortion." He goes, "You're going to end abortion by knocking on doors?" I said, "Well, sir, what else can we do?" He said, "You know, you need a plan. You should give yourself a plan with a lot of years. Like, I don't know. It's a big thing, Specialist Jones. Give yourself like 40 years. So I think he said 40 years. I don't know what inspired me, but I went to my barracks and I sketched out a 40-year plan. He said, "Start with your goal and work your way backwards, step by step by step, and then work the plan forward." Do you know in that first plan I put that Roe v. Wade would overturn in 2022? I wrote that in 1991. And then in 2031, there would be a human life amendment to the Constitution and life would be protected from California to Maine, from Hawaii to Florida. And that was the plan. And what was in the middle? Well, you can guess. Writing books, running political campaigns, making movies, you know, all the things that I've done and I do. I didn't have podcasting on there. I mean, if I did, that would be quite amazing. I did have a radio show in the plan, which I did for many years. You don't know that. I had a radio show. Local talk radio is the best thing in the world. And I look at this podcast as local talk radio. This is talk radio with my tribe. Although we have listeners in almost every country in the world. So today it's a Hawaii special. We're going to kick it off with Bear Wozniak, surf legend Bear Wozniak, host of the Long Ride Home on EWTN, which I am a cast member in. Did you know that I'm in a reality show on television? Yes, that's true. I should talk about that more. I'm on the Long Ride Home with Bear Wozniak on EWTN. You can catch me on that. Not a regular cast member. I pop in here and there and cause mischief with the guys as they travel across America. So we talked to Bear Wozniak about his upcoming book on manliness, Where Have All the Cowboys Gone? And then we talked to a cowboy in a way. We talked to Gary Cordery. He is running for governor of Hawaii. He's a successful businessman who is putting it all on the line because he loves his community. That's what cowboys do. And we talk about with Gary, we talk about medical freedom, economic freedom, and all of that, and about Roe v. Wade, his stance on abortion. So this is a great show. And do you know what I had in my plan that I wrote in 1991? That I would run for governor in 2022 because the battle would come to the state of Hawaii. I'm not running for governor. And I'm glad because we're doing a lot of important work around the world with the Vulnerable People Project. But Gary Cordery is. So here we are on Waikiki Beach. We interview a guy that might be the next governor who is pro-life. So I'm glad he is running for governor so I can run the Vulnerable People Project, which sponsors this podcast, as you know, and we need your help more than ever. Let me tell you what we did today at the Vulnerable People Project. Two of our team members are at the International Religious Freedom Conference, sponsored by the U.S. State Department in Washington, D.C. I am still in Hawaii, of course, doing this show, among other things. What did I do today? I'm working with government officials and media folks to break a story on Ukrainian women. You're going to hear about this soon. Sitting in jails across America, they presented themselves at the border and then were promptly sent to U.S. jails. You don't believe me? It's going to come out. So we're working on getting these Ukrainian women out of jails. I'm writing an op-ed on our broken border security, which leads to sorrowful migrants who are being smuggled into this country to be exploited, dying. Worked on that article. And overwhelming responsibilities with what we're doing across Afghanistan and Pakistan and in Western Ukraine. And we need your help. So join the Vulnerable People Project by going to thegreatcampaign.org and becoming a monthly donor. We need your support now more than ever. This episode is also being brought to you by MyPillow.com. Go to MyPillow.com. Use the code Jones for deep discounts. I have been in Hawaii for a month. I forgot to bring my pillow. I'm going back to the hill country of Texas where my mattress topper, Giza Dream sheets, and several beautiful My Pillows are waiting for me. I can't wait to get back to them. Also, my mailbox is going to be stuffed full. And what's going to be in that mailbox? Several weeks of epic times. You need, but luckily my subscription is print and digital. Go to iReadEpic.com. Use the code Jason Jones. See, Jones for the pillows. Jason Jones for the paper that you read while you're resting against your pillows. And when you use the code Jason Jones, you get a great deal on both the digital and print subscriptions. Sorry for that. Subscriptions. Go to iReadEpic.com. Jason Jones. Here we go. Beer Wozniak, Gary Cordery, you're coming with me to the great state of Hawaii on the Jason Jones Show. Beer Wozniak, it's the biggest day of your life. This is the break you have been waiting for. Welcome to the Jason Jones Show.
Aloha, Jason. Jason who now? Who is that?
Jason Jones. Are you nervous? Are your palms sweaty?
Oh, I've heard of you. I've heard of you.
Your palms sweaty?
I'm not going skydiving or anything.
All right, this is, can we confess to people what's going on here technologically? It's a little weird.
Oh, what is that? That we're like 1 mile away, but we're not.
We're not 1 mile away. I'm at the Outrigger Waikiki Hotel.
Oh,
got a
right
room
there.
Set up my podcast on the balcony, set up my equipment because I'm interviewing you, Gary Cordery, doing a Hawaii special, and you had surgery, so you're in your house like 200 yards away. I'm here on the ocean, and you're not here.
I didn't know you were that close. Do you see the swells? I mean, I had this hip muscle reattachment surgery, and of course, one of the best swells of the summer is hitting right now. I mean, it's advisory levels on the South Shore in Waikiki, perfect offshore winds, and I'm sitting having coffee, talking to Jason Jones, and not surfing.
Now, what kind of coffee are you having? I'm having Mac Nut coffee right now from ABC Store.
I'm having Kai coffee, Hawaiian kind.
Oh, that's my favorite. You took me there. It's the best coffee I ever had in my life.
Yeah, it is.
But the line is ridiculous. You'd think there's a roller coaster at the end of that place.
It's longer lines than for people wanting your autograph.
Well, that's not too hard. So, Beer Wozniak, you're like my brother. Here we are. This is my first day, 49 days in a row of the Jason Jones Show, ROE. 49 days in a row. Tomorrow we're kicking off with Dr. Michael New. There'll be 48 shows on the history of abortion, a pro-life leader. So you're kind of a pro-life leader, but I wanted to kick it off with a Hawaii special because I'm in Hawaii. And for me, my pro-life journey began as a 17-year-old going door-to-door, knocking on doors in Waihua, talking to people about abortion as a young 17-year-old private in the infantry. And now through my movies, do the podcast and my rooks. You know, we knock on doors all over the world. And as you probably know, I star, I have a reality show on EWTN as well.
Yeah, Long Ride Home with Bear Wozniak.
Yeah, that's it. I don't like the name. I thought the I argued for the Long Ride Home with it's Jason Jones and companions.
We already sold the foreign rights. It's, you know, that's it.
I have so many people come up to me because I'm on your show. And, you know, I'm not even a recurring character. I just get to be a special, like, pop in here and there guy.
Well, you know, what do they say to you? Do they hit you or do they say something? You know what happens to me, Jason? Wherever I go, someone will say, oh, yeah, Jason Jones come and say hi to you. Just like, pop up.
That's just so you know not to talk bad about it. Tell him, hey, Jason's watching you right now. So Bear Wozniak, surf legend, martial artist, extreme athlete, had a hip replacement. A muscle attachment. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Because I do have muscle there in that area.
Yeah.
That's something you probably don't know about.
I don't. Well, you're an older fella. I mean, you're not supposed to ask a woman their age. Can we ask you your age? I mean, you're an older fella.
You know what? Everyone wants to know.
I want to know. No,
I'm 68.
Yeah.
And I still tandem surf with my wife at least once a week. That's where we do these extreme. I lift her over my head while she does extreme lifts. All I do is hold my hand up in the air and she does all these contortions. But yeah, we still tandem surf. That's how I pulled my muscle actually was out surfing my outrigger canoe. I hoolied it. I'd actually injured it before, but then I hoolied my canoe and just decided I would rip my muscle loose. And, so yeah, we're in the water all the time. The ocean has this amazing healing effect and amazing ability to keep you healthy. And so I'm very, very fit for someone my age.
I mean, you're fit for somebody who's 22 and you're built like a rock. I mean, that tandem surfing, have you ever seen these CrossFit knuckleheads? No offense if you're a CrossFit knucklehead, who will do like clean and jerks on a BOSO ball. And you're like, what are you doing? But that's what tandem surfing is. It's like you're basically doing cleans and the snatch, these Olympic lifts, on a board surrounded by people who don't know to look out for people on boards with a woman over your head, and you're almost 70. That's ridiculous.
You know what's interesting is that think of it kind of like as pair skating, except for in pair skating, the woman gets a running leap to get that momentum, that energy to go up. Where with me, with Cindy, I basically give her a signal by pressing down on her hips when it's time. And sometimes as she's getting up, she's laying in front of me. As she gets up, when I get up and she gets up, I'll signal her as she's getting up to rotate and turn and get ready to leap. So her leaping will power my bottom turn. But it takes a real unity, you know, to be able to do that with your wife. So so we have a great experience out there. And it's actually how I met her. I was doing a tandem surfing exhibition in Cocoa Beach, Florida. And someone said, anybody wants to learn how to tandem, come up here. And she jumped up and said, pick me. She had been watching us for 8 years, never met her. And that day I got to meet her on the beach 7 years ago on Easter Sunday morning after Easter Sunday Mass.
And you have a beautiful, wonderful wife. You said it's like tandem skating. But no, it'd be like tandem skating during an earthquake because the ground is moving underneath you. It'd be like tandem skating during an earthquake in sand.
Well, that's how I lost my meniscus, was tandem skateboarding, doing a lift while tandem skateboarding.
Is that a thing?
So I don't. Yeah, well, apparently it wasn't. My meniscus is somewhere in California. But tandem surfing is so, I think it's just an ultimate expression of what a human being can do. One of the things, because you're one with waves, you know, waves were first created 13 billion years ago when God said, let there be light. You know, there are light waves, sound waves, ready waves, ocean waves.
That's beautiful.
And surfers ride them. And so to be on a board with my wife, when she first gets up, she puts her back against my chest, kind of like the way John was with Jesus at the Last Supper. She senses what I'm doing and she flows with me. And then when I signal her, she takes that leap of faith. You know, and I can't really lift her if she doesn't jump. And so that's kind of that picture of faith, where faith rests. First, faith has to know to rest. Rest in the Lord. So you're not moving at your timing or your power. And then at the Lord's signal, we have to take that leap. So faith rests and faith leaps. And when she leaps, beautiful, beautiful things happen. It's just, one arm back. I lift her by the small of her back, by one arm, and she's arched over my back. And then I spin her, and she does a handstand on my forearm. And then I reverse pop her and hold her just with one arm over my head. It takes a woman who's really trusts you. And my job is to inspire trust in her, which is what Jesus does for us. He gives us the gift of faith. We all, whether we're Christians, believer in God or not, he's put in our hearts a gift that desires him. And so our job is just to respond. We have to take that leap at some point.
That's beautiful. Can I ask you about the other side of the coin? I'd have to imagine, like when my wife and I go grocery shopping and I'm, you know, we're pushing the cart together and then I run over her toe. She's like, are you an idiot? Did you not even know how to push a cart? So there has to be those moments where like one of you makes a mistake and gets really upset, right? Has that ever happened where you like dropped
it really, her? It really doesn't happen with Cindy and I, but I'm going to tell you, man, there's nothing like, it's nothing like competing for the world title. Now, Cindy and I, we compete, but mostly for the joy of it. But going for my world titles, that's the same as going to war. And it's like training, serious training.
You were world champion how many times?
2-time Masters world champion.
Amazing.
But you have these alpha males, right? Because you got to be an excellent surfer and you can't be a poser to go out there and do that. And then you have the women who can become very catty with each other. So you've got this conflict between the alpha male on each board and the catty women on each board. And then you have the man and the woman trying to cooperate with each other. And it's the most soap opera drama you can imagine versus at other times the most beautiful thing. But Cindy and I, she's so full of grace and she so much wants to help me to be able to do what I do. But ultimately, you know, I have her in a lift. Think about it, a 12-foot face. She's upside down looking backwards at the wave. Well, I'm at the breaking wave, which is the scary part of the wave. You know, she's looking right into the tube while we're surfing. And there are times when we have to talk through things, but our time on the board is, it's because of her just full of grace. She flows with me so well and she helps me so much. And I saw that in her
you're giving me butterflies just explaining it, but you've never made a mistake with each other. Like you've never just dropped her on her head in the water or she's never like sneezed and caused you to like fall off the board.
Yeah, but here's the thing, the tandem man, his number one job is to protect the woman. So when there's a wipeout, I'm going to clear her from the board. I'm going to throw her. Or what I do is when I first met her, she asked me, so did you have surgery on your back? And I go, no. And then a couple of weeks later, she said, are you sure you didn't have surgery? Because you have these like stitches or scars on your back. And I go, oh no, that's when there's a wipeout. Like if someone drops in on me and she's in a lift, I'm going to let him just crash into my shins and hold the line.
Wow.
But if there's a wipeout happening, I will pop her out of a lift and hold her up high on my chest, cradle her. I'll jump backwards off the board, and that my leash is connected to the board, so it'll drag me across reefs. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I had that experience. So my job is to protect her. It's not to say that she isn't valiant and we haven't had our wipeouts. But a man who allows his partner to get hurt doesn't get to tandem surf anymore because word gets out on the Coconut Telegraph pretty fast. And that goes back again to Jesus, you know, being our Savior. By his stripes we are healed. I bear the marks of protecting my partner. And if people doubt it, all they got to do is look at my shins. They kind of look like an amusement park from people banging into them or my back.
Yeah, I've noticed that. And now here, this is a perfect segue. You and I are both have books coming out next year with Sophia Press. And I always say that sports are sacraments. They're secular sacraments. They're a sign in a moment of how you're going to live your life, right?
True.
And they're signs, you know, are you going to give it all? Are you going to take more of the responsibility than others? Are you going to lean on others? Do you have fortitude, courage? And it's good to find out, oh, I'm a coward or I'm this, I'm that. It's good to know so you can say, I have to fix that. That's why I think sports are so important for young people. Now, we've made an idol out of sports in our society, but that doesn't mean that sports is not very important. And so what I wanted to talk to you about is you have a new book coming out on manliness next year. And what's the title?
The title is Where Have All the Cowboys Gone?
Okay.
12 Rules of Manliness, and then there's going to be another book, 12 more rules, but – It's based on your life.
Well, that's very sweet. I'm calling my lawyer right now. You're going to be hearing from us. I want 50% of the royalties.
But I think, you know, my wife is a cowgirl. My wife is a cowgirl, and we were driving around the point at Diamond Head about 6 months ago, and she said, "You're going to love this song." And she turned up the country station, and the girl singing, you know, "Where Have All the Cowboys Gone?" And I was riding motorcycles last year. I guess it was about a year ago she had me hear that song. And I was riding. I went to Boise to help promote the EWTN radio station there. And I said, "Why don't we do a little motorcycle ride? Get a few guys together." Well, 60 guys showed up to ride motorcycles and cigars after. But, you know, I'm in cowboy country. And there was a cowboy there. I asked him before the ride, "Are you a cowboy?" Because, man, dude, he looked like a cowboy. He looked about my age, but he just looked rugged and just everything you'd want to think of a cowboy. And he said, "Well, I've worked at ranches my whole life." And his wife goes, "Yeah, he's a cowboy." But when we were doing that ride and we were out along the Payette River going through these canyons, we pulled over for a break. They were following us at the escort truck. And I asked her, "Are men today anything like cowboys?" And she said, "They're not anything like cowboys. Like they used to be." But she kind of left it hanging like the way I describe it is I remember when I was a kid, visiting my grandparents in the prairies of the Dakotas, there'd be that swinging screen door, and it would just kind of bang a couple times when you closed it. It just seemed like a screen door banging in the wind. Like it was such a pregnant statement that she made. The men aren't anything like cowboys anymore. And we need men to cowboy up. We need men to live by the cowboy code. We need men.
And you know what, Bear? I am not. I am not. I know that I'm kind of a weak man. You know, when I travel and speak, have you ever had this experience? You travel and, you know, I'll be speaking in Wyoming or North Dakota or somewhere at a Catholic event. And, you know, the young people and the women will be really impressed by my speech. And then there's always the guy in the back that just looks at me like, "Yeah, I know you're a soft punk." And then you shake his hand and it's like a baboon's hand. It's just like muscle. Like you could feel the muscles on his hand. And, you know, this is a steady Eddie. This guy's solid as a rock. And he sees me. He knows, look, I have my apostolate. I have my mission, which I am not worthy of at all. But just because you're not, G.K. Chesterton said, just because anything worth doing is worth doing badly. And anything that needs to be done is worth being done by anybody. But then you look at a guy like this, you know, and I'll see these guys when I travel and speak, and you know, you meet these cowboys. Have you ever had that experience?
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's different feelings. There's a solidness, and then there's also a sense of safety that if that guy's in this room, everything's going to be okay. Sort of thing.
Yes. Yes.
And then there's a sense of being measured, but. Usually when they look at me, Jason, they go, "Man, I wish I was like him." You know? No, I mean, they say, "Man, I wish I was like Jason Jones." That's the first thing that comes to it. No,
well, you know, but the thing is that, you know, it's sort of our vocation forms us, and my vocation and, you know, and where we're planted. My book with Sophia Press is on rocky soil, right? That's the title, on rocky soil. And so grace builds upon nature, and I'm grateful for God's grace and how he's built upon my nature, but I was planted in rocky soil. And you know, to get a cowboy, you need the right soil, and you need the right farmers. And to get a guy like the kind of guys we want that you're talking about, it doesn't mean we can't aspire to their virtues, right? But it takes the right kind of soil and the right kind of formation and care. And so if we don't see cowboys around us, in our it means that our families, our parish community, our church communities, we're not forming them.
You know, Jason, my wife, she loves real men. She likes to see men be men.
Yeah.
And one of her comments when I first brought her to Hawaii is the men in Hawaii are men.
Yes.
There's a community of men. There's a brotherhood of men.
Waikiki, you see the beach, the surf, the Beach Boys, You see the Beach Boys, and they're men. Those are the kind of guys I'm talking about, right? You see the Beach Boys, you could plop him down, you could push him out of a plane with a parachute into Wyoming, and he'd be right at home, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and the thing about it is that there's a brotherhood here. I mean, you know, when you walk down the, when you walked along Waikiki yesterday, how many times did someone say uncle to you?
Tell the story about when you and I first met. It was like falling in love. It was when we walked down the street in Waikiki, we were at that event. Tell, do you want me to tell a story? Or you want to tell a story?
Yeah, you probably have it etched in your mind because I'm such a hero to you.
You are such a hero to me. So we were, our bishop invited us to a meeting on how to use media, and we, Bear and I went, and everyone stood up and introduced themselves. I had a movie coming out that week, and Bear was building his radio show, preparing to also have a podcast. There was a guy there that like poo-pooed Bear and I and said, well, called us daydreamers. And I'm like, daydreamers? My movie's made. Like, it's going to, I don't know.
You were already award-winning movie.
I don't know. Yeah, that was cute. Thank you, sir. And he, but he had daydreams of his own that were the only important thing. But anyway, so we after we met, you and I didn't know each other, and we had, which is bizarre that we had never met. And then I couldn't believe that a guy like you lived on my block and we never met. But then you and I walked down Waikiki, and everyone who saw us was like, hey, Bear, hey, Jason. Hey, Bear, hey, Jason. Hey, Bear, hey, Jason. Like, everyone knew you, knew me. They weren't surprised to see us walking together. And there's that real community, and there's that real salt of the earth. And, you know, the Beach Boys have been washed away from Waikiki Beach, which is really sad because Waikiki was a very safe place with roots and community. And I feel like that's going to be washed away, and it's just going to be corporations and their low-wage employees.
Well, the real watermen, though, are still a community. And, you know, what Cindy sees there is the young men call you uncle. You're not just a dad, you're also an uncle. Anyone, now less and less people call me uncle now, I'm getting older, but anyone older than you, you refer to as uncle.
And I remember when your papa. You went from uncle to papa.
Lolo. Bro or cuz or, but when I came here, like so many surfers, there's so many awesome surfers that show up here. Not saying I'm an awesome surfer, but they're a dime a dozen. It's different than being a waterman. There's people like Brian Kialana or Archie Kalepa or Clyde Icao. And the list goes on. These are royalty. These are people that have experienced the mana of the ocean.
And I got to meet Clyde through you, which was just unbelievable.
Yeah, I was just with him the other day. So, but to be with people that the ocean will empower you, you know, but it'll also humble you. So there's this power and humility that go hand in hand with these men. And I remember I paddled my surfboard from the island of Molokai to the island of Oahu, which is about 30 miles of very treacherous ocean. And it was at that time that Blue Makua and Duki, kind of like the two main uncles on the beach in Waikiki, asked me to come talk story with them. And they listened for over an hour and a half about that adventure of mine. It took me 10 hours and 19 minutes. And it was then that I was, if I was grafted into the heart and soul of Hawaii. It wasn't because I was some hot surfer. It's because they understood that I paddled that channel out of pure love for that water. It was like caressing the ocean every paddle stroke. And so there is that community of men here. And I remember a young man in one of our first events acted out in the water towards his one of the first world titles, acted out against his partner because, like you said, he was disappointed in her, and he was forcing her to try to drop into waves she was scared of. And man, Brian Kialana came over and took that girl off the board, and I spoke from the speaker that he was being banned for a year from surfing. I mean, and I uncled him, but he came up to me afterwards, and a year later, when at the next event, he came up. I looked for him, I gave him a big hug, and I said, "Welcome back." And you know, we uncled him, we taught him, you know. And so men like the man you're describing in Wyoming.
And young men want that. They want to be uncled, right? They want older men to put them in their place.
And we need, so when you're in Wyoming and you see that, that's what I'm trying to inspire through my Bear School of Manliness and we try to do through our writings. Because the thing about your work on pro-life, is ultimately, to me, that whole work is based on one thing, challenging men to be men. Because when a woman... First of all, love and responsibility. You shouldn't be having sex with a woman unless you're married to her. But beyond that, if a woman finds herself in that position, If you're taking an advantage of a woman like that to the point where she feels she needs to go get an abortion, I think 90% of women won't get an abortion if there's a strong man, either the one who impregnated her or someone else to stand with her. Yes. So the whole pro-life movement, the what we really need in order to change that whole culture is for women to start saying no to men, to having sex outside of marriage. Hey, Jason, the other day my son goes, hey, when this Roe v. Wade thing was announced, you know, before it was actually released, he said, I heard this leftist feminazi woman saying, well, then we're just not going to have sex with men anymore. And I'm like, bingo. It went full circle. You know, it's like, yeah, you don't have sex outside of marriage. That's a very sacred, beautiful, and very powerful, powerful thing. And so if women will keep that social contract with each other and say, no, I'm not going to have sex with boys. I can only have sex with a man. A man is someone who is ready to devote his life to her. And then, you know, if a woman finds herself in a vulnerable place, maybe there's an uncle or a father or a brother or someone who will say, I'm going to stand with you. I'm going to help you through this. The solution to abortion is men being men.
Yeah, it's so interesting, too. And the reason why young women now are saying, you know, we're not going to have sex with men is because they realize now there will be a consequence. But what they didn't understand is abortion is a consequence. Abortion is a devastating consequence. We're, you know, much more challenging than having a child. I would know because at 17 years old, I'm responsible for an abortion. At 18, I become a father. 19, I become a father. So I was a teen parent. I was also a young man carrying the burden of an abortion. And I can tell you from my experience, there's consequences. Also, I can look at the mother of my first two children and see how her life has unfurled. And I could look at my high school girlfriend that had the abortion. I could see how her life has unfurled. And I can tell you the consequences of having an abortion are very devastating. My girlfriend in high school lost her fertility as a young girl who had a forced abortion by the abortion. So there are consequences.
We want to control nature. You know, we don't look at nature and understand what nature is and learn that we have our nature as men and women. The last 100 years, we've decided we're going to control nature. We're going to use in vitro fertilization and kill off half of the impregnated embryos that aren't used. We're going to try to make men into women. We're going to use contraception. We're going to use abortion. All of that is an assault on nature. It's kind of an egotistic approach to life, isn't it? To think that that's my job. And, you know, as a surfer, I go out into nature, and nature is wild, and nature will eventually have its way with you. And so when you attack nature, which is, of course, according to God's order, you will have the consequence. Sooner or later, it's going to catch up with you and bite you. And you try to force your will on a big wave, you're going to get schooled. And so the consequences, the devastation psychologically and emotionally to women, I think I see them being so emotionally just twisted every which way. And then I see males that never become, they always remain boys. 'Cause boys,
it's sorrowful, isn't it?
Yeah, they just seek pleasure. They don't seek responsibility. And you don't become a man unless you seek and accept kuleana or accept responsibility. And to me, the way a man treats a woman defines it.
I agree. Can I share with you something that happened the other day, Bear? I was with my wife. I ranted about this yesterday.
I ranted.
Oh. My wife said, I don't really cuss. I don't use swear words. I don't, you know, I might have, I don't even think, even before I was a Christian, I may be blasphemed a little bit here and there. The moment I assented to the belief in God, I've only blasphemed once, and it came out of nowhere, and I was like, what was that? I don't know if I heard it in a movie or what. It just came out of my mouth. That was like 15 years ago. I'll never forget it. But I don't, you know, drop F-bombs, this and that. My wife's like, you dropped more F-bombs in 90 seconds right now, and there was a young woman over there, and you just dropped more F-bombs than in all the time I've known you, over 20 years. But this is what happened. We went to hear John Cruise. We went to John Cruise's last concert
You did?
Brother, it was one of the best concerts I ever went to, ever. And I think he's pro-life. I'm telling you, he did all these songs by other artists that had to do with babies. It was very strange. I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's when really Roe Overturning hit me. He sang this one Hawaiian song about the flower that falls into the pool and it spins around in the pond for a while and then it gets washed out through the stream into the ocean. It's a metaphor on childbirth. That's how he ended the concert. And I thought, Roe v. Wade overturns. He ends his concert with this song in Hawaiian and just tears were pouring down my face. But then we wanted to eat. The only place open in Waikiki now is Denny's or the Yard House after 11 p.m. So we went to the Yard House. The Yard House was
that's a good place.
Yeah, the Yard House is great. And I'm so silly. I always say to my wife, I always love the music they play here. She's like, yeah, that's their theme.
You,
look at their sign. And I'm like, I looked at the sign and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's their theme.
You know, I met the guys before they opened that place, and I got to be there opening night. And the guy had his iPad, and he was doing the playlist live, you know, kind of DJing it, not announcing it, but yeah, music is a big part of the Yard House.
Yeah, amazing. So we're at the Yard House. We're sitting outside. We're sitting on the very outside table, and there are a bunch of NFL football players, and their wives are right there. And I see this woman with her girl look to be 19. Or in her late teens, and she had her head on this man, looked like she was sleeping, and I thought maybe she just had a heat stroke or just surfing too much, or she was just tired because it was late. She's a young girl, but then I watched them try to carry her to a cab, and so there was this older man and a young girl who was taking selfies with her friend in the background, asleep. I thought maybe asleep. But then when they tried to, they carried her Weekend at Bernie style to an Uber, and the Uber's like, don't put her in my car. And the girl just collapsed when they kind of tried to set her down onto the sidewalk. And I said, this is too much. So I walked over there, and I thought I was talking to the father. I said, are you her father? And he said, no. And then the one girl that wasn't unconscious goes, well, he's our shot father. He was buying us shots all night. So you have a middle-aged man, two young girls, and then a young guy with a backpack and Bose speakers around his neck. Not saying that guy was a drug dealer, but I kind of, he had the uniform of a drug dealer, right? So then my first thought was, is this fentanyl? So I said, has she taken fentanyl? Has she taken any drugs? And their eyeballs about popped out of their head when I said that. No, we're just drinking. I said, how old is she? The one girl says 21, who's taking selfies with her unconscious friend in the background. And the guy with the drug dealer uniform said, she's 24. They said it at the same time. 21, 24. And I'm like, uh-huh. Okay, so she's a minor. And I go to the guy, you're not her father? No. All right. I go back. I ask the waiter for water. I tell my wife to call the police. The police show up, like 9 police cars and a fire truck. I said to my wife, why don't they just send an ambulance, an ice cream truck and a tank? Like, where's the ambulance? There's no ambulance, right? And yeah. Maybe because Hawaii does not have enough ambulances. My audience, I'm about to interview Gary Cordery, who's running for governor. You're going to have to hear the story again because I'm going to vent to Gary about this too. We need more ambulances on Oahu. But the police show up and they just say there's nothing we can do and they drive away. Then I watch a grown man with this and her friend dragging her down the street like they have their arms around each shoulder, each of them, and then they're walking as her feet are just dragging. Do you think this man, where have all the cowboys gone? There are consequences to believing that men and women are the same. Do you think in 1950, a grown man, 50-year-old man, if police rolled up on a 50-year-old man who'd been buying a young girl shots, they didn't ask to see her ID. I put my hand on her head. She was cold as ice. This is where I'm like, is she dying? Is she having an overdose on fentanyl? Do you think in 1950, not that things were great then, right? I mean, I'm not saying we had a utopia. We had different evils then in 1950, right? But do you think that they would have let a middle-aged man drag a drunk woman down the street to wherever? Where was he taking? Do I think he was? So that's what I saw. There are consequences. I'm sorry.
Men held each other to a code. I mean, you might not live up to it. But you darn sure knew that you had failed if you didn't. You know, there was a code that women lived by. There was more of a code that men live by. And there is that, there is this thing nowadays that we want our freedom. You know, this, we get to do it, we get to do whatever we want to do. Instead of, and that's just a license for being totally, put in bondage. When you do whatever you want to do, eventually you end up in bondage. And so, as opposed to the liberty, the power of the Holy Spirit to keep you free, and to pursue your telos, you know, to pursue your nature, to pursue your true end, which is to be fully human, fully alive, which is to be consistent with the very nature God gave you. And so back in the day, I mean, Jason, this is bizarre, but I remember a girl having a baby, and I said, well, I think I was like maybe a fifth grade, and I go, how could she have a baby? She's not married. Children were protected. They didn't even understand, how people got pregnant. And it was unheard of for people to live together before they were married. Now you go into the average non-denominational church, and a good amount of those people are living together and not married.
Yeah.
So there's just this whole, as John Paul II, his first writing, love and responsibility, they go hand in hand, because love is willing to do good for the other through self-donation. And so if you're a man, if you're a boy, you want to become a man, find someone that you can cherish, find a good woman, and lay down your life for her. And then bring children into eternal beings, you know, into existence, and raise them up and show them the way that they should go by leading them by example.
We're a broken society, Bear. I've had to learn how to cherish my wife, how to treat women properly. You know, I could look back at my life at a destruction that I've left in my wake. And I thought I was being a good man. I thought I was, our society's telling young men, like, this is what you need to do to be a good man. You know, so I was following orders. I was obeying the culture. And then you look back and you just see you've hurt so many people. And that's why having friends like you and Benjamin Watson, of anyone I've ever met, you talk about cherish his wife. You just follow him on social media and his wife's social media. You're like, wow, you know, I wish I could be a man like Benjamin Watson. Well, I'll never be a man like Benjamin Watson. I hope I can raise boys like Benjamin Watson or, you know, and I don't know if I met you when you were probably in your late 50s, mid 50s. Well, I think I met you when you were around my age, and now you're almost 70. That means I'm old.
How old are you? You're 34?
I'm 50. I'm 30-50.
30-50.
Yeah.
30-50.
I'm 50. I love getting older, though, by the way. I cannot wait. I mean, I'll take my time getting there, but I praise God. If I have the privilege of getting really old, having children when I was a teenager, I cannot wait to be sitting at a park bench with my older children and we're elderly together. I want to be that guy. Like, I want to be the 90-year-old with the 72-year-old, my son, who will be 72 when I'm 90, right? Yeah, 73.
Yeah.
So I want to be there, like the old man with the old man. Not that now in the 70s, not old anymore.
Hey,
my dad's 70. And he looks
in the reality, 50. You're the guy on the Progressive commercials now.
I am.
You know, people that are becoming like their parents. You know?
No, I want to. I just, getting older is great. The best thing about getting older is having old friendships. Like, you're like, wow, I've been friends with you forever. And seeing people change and people grow. And then you learn, you do get wisdom. You know, it takes time. Today I was lying in bed thinking about a friend whose life is really not doing well. But they were really smart and ambitious as young people. But I remember the music that they listened to and kind of the persona that they took on as in like junior high. And I thought, wow, we should be careful what we fake that we are when we're kids. Kids should be very careful and we should be very disciplined in not allowing our children to sort of mimic low behavior, even if they're not living low behavior, because they will. They will become they're pretending to be. And how many, do you remember being in junior high and you had a friend who was a good student from a good family, but they took on the persona of, I guess when you were a kid, a beatnik or whatever. But
no, not a beatnik.
What would be like a, you know, a low persona?
I was never a stoner. You know, that was kind of.
Yeah, like this is what this kid did, was a stoner persona, listened to really sick music.
Well, you know what? I got to tell you, I was golfing the other day, a little tournament, you know. And so there was a couple of young guys there, probably in their late 20s, early 30s, and they were listening to the worst music, you know, like the most, like, I'm the tough guy, and using the worst words and speaking so profanely about women. And I asked them at one point, do you think that music harms your soul? You know, because I'm old enough, I get to ask those kind of questions.
It does, though. You know, my wife was listening to John Cruise, and who I turned her on to, and she said, this is just so beautiful. And I said, listen, yeah. Country music, Hawaiian music, reggae, all the traditional musics that are actually rooted in a culture are beautiful. Then you have pop music, which is nothing but a product. It's disgusting. It's artificial. Oh, it's manufactured. Yeah. And it's gross. And it's not real. And it doesn't resemble anything that's transcendently real.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, country music is going that way. And in a little way, even Hawaiian music.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, but the Hawaiian music, so beautiful, is how many songs are written about sports? But so much of Hawaiian music is about surfing and the waterman life, you know, throwing net.
But family and loving fish. grandma's cooking.
And the Hawaiian music is about places. The beautiful canyon, the valleys, and you hear that same thing in the country western music, but all of them tend to tell a story, and ultimately that story is about relationship, it's about family. So yeah, it was so sad when I said that to those guys, and they go, no, we don't think it does, and I just kind of left it hanging there. But I'm sure they're gonna think twice about it. I mean, when you hear people just that tough guy, when you hear someone come, when you see someone coming down the road playing that tough guy music super loud, you know that guy really has issues with, he has real issues with self-confidence, you know? He's got mama issues, he's got papa issues, he's not a real man, you can just tell.
Or maybe it reflects the disorder in his childhood, the disorder in the formation, and it jives with them, but unfortunately, it's disordered. And music can order you. You know, when I was an atheist, my favorite artist was Kirk Franklin. And I really credit Kirk Franklin with kind of putting braces on my soul and slowly listening to Kirk Franklin all of the time, like all day, every day. This young, wild punk kid. There were braces on my soul. It slowly began to order to a place where this rocky soil, the rocky soil that is my nature, I assented to the truth of God. And so music can help order us, right? Or it can lead. And again, if you come from a good home, your soul is, you're ordered properly, you start listening to disordered music, it's going to pervert you. It's going to deform you.
You're hanging around in the place, as I think it's someone, where scoffers sit. You know, of course, I know you love Warren Carroll, the great historian.
Oh, come on, he's the best. His nonfiction reads like pro. It reads like a novel. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, one of those novels with a million characters you got to try to keep up with. But he wrote about that Chinese emperor leader who every year would send his emissaries out into the different villages and cities. And he wanted them to report back on one thing: what is the music like? Because the music really expresses: are they happy? Are they? Is there chaos? Are they upset? Is there anarchy? He knew that the music reflected the nature of the people. So, yeah.
And you told me that when I was on your show. That I got to read. I got to find that. That is beautiful.
You can't find it though. When I read Warren Carroll, it's like, oh, I got to remember that. And then like
seven volumes.
Volumes and volumes and volumes.
Yeah, those volumes are huge. But my favorite are his books on the French Revolution, the Spanish Revolution, and then they're very thin.
It fits it all, man. If you read those, you're going to find out what's happening today.
Yes. And then of course, the one on Our Lady of Guadalupe. So, hey, I have
also on the French Revolution. You know,
I have, pray God.
We're guillotined themselves.
Hey, Bear, pray God. The next governor of Hawaii is in the lobby of the hotel texting me, Gary Cordery. He's going to be coming on right after you. I want to ask you two final questions. I want to do a whole series of interviews with you when your book comes out on each of the characteristics of manliness, so I can grow my podcast off of your fame and celebrity.
Yes, I know.
And so, but I want to ask you two things.
It's amazing how no one knows I'm famous, though.
Yeah, but we're going to let them know. You're famous. Okay. You're Catholic famous. You're surfer famous. You're Hawaii famous. What more do you need? What do you need, Peter Wozniak?
I just want to be like you.
You're EWTN famous. Okay, so I want to ask you two final questions. One, first question will be, can you give us one of your attributes, traits, characteristics of a cowboy, of manliness? And then second, is there any question you want me to ask candidate for governor Gary Cordery when I interview him? So those are your two last questions.
Well, of course, my question for him is a very personal thing, and it's not the big thing of it's the pro-life stance and things like that. But we are being overwhelmed by thugs on the street in Waikiki, and they like to call themselves homeless. Yesterday we had to, my wife stopped someone from stealing someone. We didn't even see it. Just sitting having coffee, someone taking their purse, and I've had to stop so many of these thugs, stopping women in the street and just, the fear that they cause, and going to Easter Mass and hearing the most horrible things coming out of this woman's mouth at 6 a.m. going to Easter Mass. So I'd like to know,
how are we
going to
clean up these thugs? The same thing, good question.
Same thing that you talked, what we led off about, that girl that you saw in Waikiki near the Yard House. When are they going to stop making excuses and call a thug a thug? And they're dangerous. Children are scared. And when are they going to take care of that situation here in Waikiki and probably other places too? As far as one of the rules of dangerous, one of the rules of manliness, one of the things I have written.
I like that Freudian slip, because men are dangerous.
Yeah, we need to be dangerous.
Was that from C.S. Lewis? He was dangerous.
I've read four of his books. It was something like
he was dangerous, but he was good, or something like that. Oh, it's a famous quote.
Yeah, well, you can't be good. I just botched it. You can't be good if you're not dangerous.
That's exactly right. You know, I was going to bring it up when the homeless that have been pretty aggressive out here, and I run a homeless ministry. I've been very aggressive back to them, and I've taken them to task. And my son said to me, "Dad, is that really the appropriate response? Like, I think you just scared that guy." I said, I wanted to scare him because he needs to know every once in a while, things can bounce really bad when he starts harassing people.
You're giving him too much.
I'm not, it wasn't that he, what he did is he like swiped at my son, kind of like crazy. And then I put the fear of God in him. And my son was like, "Dad, do you think that was appropriate?" I go, "Son, I didn't do that for you. I didn't do that out of pride or ego. I wanted him to know that every once in a while, this ball could bounce really bad. So just don't act this way. Just don't act this way."
The homeless, we have our local homeless. So many of the people here have just been shipped here. But they're not, to call them homeless is giving them too much dignity, really. They're thugs. So many of them are just thugs. And it's not a monolithic group of people.
You're right. There are a lot of people here with mental disabilities. But is a unique situation in Waikiki, which, by the way, is brand new. There are young men who are healthy and mentally present that live on the street and walk around terrorizing people. And that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I got to give you two more things. So they tried to do something special with my hip before they actually had to reattach the muscle. And I was told, "You don't walk on this leg for 3 weeks." And I was having coffee, and this guy came up and tipped over all the coffee and tried to steal the same guy's man purse that tried to be stolen yesterday. And I got up and I started chasing him, and he had a limp and I had a cane, and my wife was walking with me calling the cops, and chased him all the way down to Cujillo on the other side of the International Marketplace. It was the slowest foot chase in the history of mankind.
You told me about that. I love it.
But my wife had asked me not to do that anymore, to call the police instead. And the police have asked me to do that too. But sometimes you just have to interrupt something that's going on. As far as your first question was, what area were we going to talk about? I think it was.
Oh, well, I think, what do we end with that? I think so. Is being dangerous one of the qualities? Dangerous.
Yeah, I think that, women, when they fight, they tend to get catty. They use innuendo. They do everything that the cancel culture does. The cancel culture is just a very
Are you a biologist? How do you even know what a woman is? Look at, wow, Bear the biologist. You now know you know what a woman
is. I love that when people ask that question. It's so hysterical. But no, men know that there comes a point when it can get physical. And so there's always that element when you hassle someone, or you abuse someone, and that there's a physical danger there. But there's more than that. We need to pray dangerously. We need to pray in ways. Like you talk with your sons every day, Lord, put us between danger and the vulnerable. We need to be bold. And you can't just be a church. You got to know what you stand for and why. But you can't be pushovers anymore. People need to know you're dangerous. And I'm not going to be able to push him out of his saddle, you know.
And you give me hope, Bear. You can be dangerous. We can be dangerous till our last breath. You know, it's like Clint Eastwood in a lot of his movies. You know, my son-in-law said when he first met me, I reminded him of, he's from Guatemala. He's like, I hope Mr. Jones isn't racist. He said, yeah, when I first met you, you reminded me of Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino. I said, Clint Eastwood was like 85 in that movie. He's like, well, you're just a big old white guy to me. he said, you're a big old scary white guy to me. And I was like, and I'm like, I'm hoping he's not racist.
But think about St. Jose Sanchez del Rio. You know, his dying when they were fighting the Cristeros, when he, with his own blood, traced the sign of the cross in the sand. That was a message that the whole country heard about. You know, his dying breath, a 13, 14-year-old boy, was dangerous.
Hey, Bear, real quick. I have potentially the next governor of Hawaii downstairs waiting for me, and I want him to like me so that we can ask for favors.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to get downstairs, brother.
Yeah, I'm going to donate $1 to
you better donate more. Research him. I haven't endorsed him yet. I'm going to try to get all the candidates for governor on the show and intersperse them over the next couple of weeks. But I want to get BJ Penn and Duke Ione on. But Gary really, I heard him at the pastor's conference this week, and he loves Jesus, and he's boldly pro-life, and he was fighting to reopen Hawaii when a lot of people were quiet.
Well, we were talking to Duke Ione, you know, former lieutenant governor, about a month ago. Or maybe 2 months ago, we're trying to bring an EWTN radio station here. We have a meeting on July 9th. We're all getting together with the bishop. But Duke Ione is my man, dude. He helped me start the That Managing program here in Hawaii. And so,
well, he's my brother. Always, you know, him and I have traveled together. Yeah. He's a good man. So it's going to be a tough choice. I got BJ Penn, Gary Cordery, and Duke Ione. These are three great men running for governor. And we got some choices.
I love BJ Penn. My son used to rent a condo from his family. I mean, never be late on that rent, obviously. But I love BJ Penn. But whenever I see him, I always go, hey, John.
Oh, that's funny.
I've done it to him twice anyway. But okay, yeah, we'll have a good conversation.
All right, Bear Wozniak. We'll have you on again soon, my brother.
Okay. Ahui ho. Aloha.
Ahui ho. Aloha. All right, guys. Coming up next is Gary Cordery, candidate for governor in Hawaii. Stick around, people of the world. Because you're going to learn a lot about a place that you've loved and dreamed about. Jason Jones Show. Gary Cordery, welcome to the Jason Jones Show.
Aloha, Jason. It's good to be here this morning.
I cannot tell you what a privilege it is to have you sitting here with me on Waikiki Beach.
There's really nothing quite like Waikiki Beach, and it is an honor. It's a great opportunity just to talk about what's real.
Now, I'm going to make a confession to you. In 1989, I came to Hawaii. First of all, you're running for governor of the greatest state in the union. Mm. The most beautiful. I've been to all 50 states. I have traveled the world. And there is no more beautiful community on earth. And there are places I love. Like, I love Iraq. When I call my wife from Iraq, she always hears the bounce in my voice. We're not moving there. You know, I hear it in your voice.
Yeah, I hear the call.
Yeah, she's like, I know you love it there. We're not moving. But there's no more beautiful. It's very unique the way it was knit together from places or people from around the world and how they intermarried and aloha and the gospel informing aloha, which a lot of people don't know about.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's just the most beautiful place in the world. And it's the place that healed me as a young, broken 17-year-old. I came here as a 17-year-old soldier at Schofield Barracks. My high school girlfriend was forced to have a third trimester abortion. And so I started going door to door in the closest houses to my barracks in Waihua, mm-hmm. I didn't realize these were Ilocano plantation workers who weren't citizens. And I would knock on their doors and ask them to help me make abortion illegal, going door to door. My captain heard I was doing this. He says, this is your plan to end abortion, is to knock on doors and harass plantation workers? And he goes, you need a plan. I made a 40-year plan in 1991. I sat down after my captain encouraged me. And I put in 2022, Roe v. Wade will overturn.
Whoa, you're a prophet.
And don't worry, I'm not going to pull papers. And I put, I'm going to run for governor of Hawaii in 2022 because it's going to become a states' rights issue. That was in a plan I wrote in 1991. And it was all that I would do national politics, national pro-life stuff when Roe v. Wade overturns. I'm going to run for governor. I'm not running for governor. You are.
I am indeed.
Which is even better because it's like if you have to say, hey, someone has to clear a minefield, I'd rather be the other guy.
Right? Yeah, thank you.
Right? I would rather the other guy clear. I want the minefield.
I'm not sure about the implication there.
I want the minefield cleared.
Okay.
Preferably.
Well, you're younger. You do it. So you could come a couple of years from now.
You do it. And so to be here with you, I just see it as a God winking at me.
Yeah, well.
And I've followed you, and I've known how courageous you have been on fighting for Hawaii's children, Hawaii's families, and really for the union, because Hawaii is the canary in the coal mine. What they've done to the people of the state of Hawaii is unbelievable because they could get away with it. We're an island community. What I didn't know about you is what a faithful Christian man you are. And I did not know how committed you were to defending the child in the womb. And I got to hear you speak at a Christian pastor's meeting here this past weekend. And you spoke so eloquently and so forcefully and from the heart on the life issue. And that's when I said, I got to get this guy on my show. Because they're linked, aren't they? It's linked. The dignity Absolutely. Of the child in the womb, and then children in Hawaii to this day have to be masked in school.
That's right.
They're linked.
Yeah, the lingering bad policies of our government are still being borne. The weight of these bad policies are still being borne by the kids, by the keiki in our school. They're still being masked. They're still being separated. They're still being told they're not normal. And so this is unbelievable in this time, in this day, in this age when so much information is out there that actually makes the masking and the shot and all of these things irrelevant in the life of a young person. And so that we would stand together, even listening to your testimony, even your opening this morning, so powerful of a stand going back so many years, longing for the Supreme Court to overturn Roe. I didn't know if I would ever see it in my lifetime. But the fact that it is overturned just reveals in my mind that God is shaking the tree, that he really does want justice. The kids' blood is crying from the ground. And that it's our turn. It's this time in our lives to stand and to bring order and to bring righteousness back to government so that there's an opportunity for people to come out of the closet, come out of the,
you hear this, come out of the closet. In Hawaii, yeah. There was a young man who spoke, I love now that I'm 50 and I see like a retired lieutenant colonel and I call him a young, he was younger than me.
You're a young man to me.
Yeah. This young man, this retired lieutenant colonel
who's
running for office in Kaneohe. I forget his name, but he was a great guy. I got to find his name. Guy's amazing. He said, Hawaii's a red state.
That's right.
And what he means by that is we're a conservative people, a traditional people, a family-centered, kuleana, responsibility, thoughtfulness of our posterity.
Yes.
People. And that there's a song by John Cruise, Build a Bridge. And in that song, it talks about thoughtfulness to posterity. They got to come out of the closet.
They got to come out.
This is a pro-life state. When I tell people that Hawaii is the most conservative state in the union, with the exception of maybe Louisiana, because Louisiana with the Cajuns, I feel very at home in Louisiana. I don't know if you've ever been to Louisiana. It's kind of like Hawaii.
I have not been to Louisiana, actually.
Very similar.
Yeah.
The Cajuns are like us. It's like Hawaii. It's very interesting. Very conservative state. And people are listening to this almost in every country in the world.
Yeah, you know, it's very true. Going back to the nation of Hawaii, long before statehood, long before the annexation, the people of Hawaii saw themselves as a family. There was no hierarchy. There was no political thing. There was the family, a caring for one another. That was really the foundation for all that we have here. We just spent the day or the other morning in Pokai Bay with the kupuna down on the west side. It was amazing to hear their longing for a return to family values, to actually to have life together, to actually respect one another, to understand their relationship to each other, to the community, to the resources, to everything that we long for here. And it's a beautiful thing. When we first came here, we met friends in Kuleo'o. They embraced us. And the unique thing about Hawaii, as you said, it is so beautiful because it's an expression of the people living in unity, living in grace, honoring one another. This is joy, and this is what we long for. We long for this.
But it's being washed away. You know, so this trip has been really, I've been here a month. My daughter got married here. She has something called the Mumu Library that's at the Summer Palace. The PBS Hawaii just did a big special on her. Honolulu Business Magazine just featured her. And if you fly on Hawaiian Airlines, they do a special on her on the flight as you're coming to Hawaii.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my family's heart is here. And so coming back, it's just, it's been really a lot of emotions for me to be back for this month. And I've had a lot of guilt about leaving and not continuing to fight. But there was a point my wife said, your first responsibility is to care for your family, and I will not have my children masked, period. We have to go. But every family, I've apologized to a lot of my friends for leaving. And these are some of the most successful, from some of the most successful business owners in Hawaii to friends of mine that drive Uber. And I've talked to waiters and waitresses and Uber drivers, and they've all said the same thing. Brah, I fight this every day. I don't want to leave. It's the last thing I ever want to do is leave, but I feel like I have to leave for my family to survive, for my children to breathe.
I wouldn't feel sorry about it. You have to make choices. You know, God's moving the pieces around the chessboard. He knows exactly what he's doing, that you left here to go do something, open up doors in Afghanistan and all around the globe. This is not an accident. That you're back, that you had this plan in 91 to come back to Hawaii. Your stand hasn't left. Maybe your residence has left, but not your stand. And that's what makes the biggest impact. It's not even necessarily the quality of time. It's not the quantity of time. It's the quality of time. So you're making a great impact here. You know, even when you come the other morning at the Coalition breakfast, people were like excited to see you. And it was like, so it was so
people
cool.
I'd worked with since I was a teenager that were my mentors. Awesome. You know, I was this angry young man, and people like Garrett Hashimoto, he wasn't there because he was sick, and Steve Hulk and Leon Hsu, these were my mentors, you know, when I was a teenager, and they were old guys in their late 30s. They were like these old dudes
in their 30s.
And they were in their 30s and 40s. And they were my mentors. So going back to that, the day after Roe v. Wade overturned, again, I just felt like God was winking at me to have the privilege to spend that morning with the pastors and folks like you. But what would you say to the people in Hawaii that are listening? And people around the world are like, what? You know, when I'm in Ukraine and they hear, oh, you're from Hawaii, I've dreamed of going to Hawaii my whole life, the one place I long to go. When I'm in Afghanistan or Iraq, Hawaii, I've dreamed of going there my whole life. There are a lot of places with sun and ocean and beach. But that's not why people long for Hawaii. It's they long for aloha.
Yeah, that's right.
And ohana and family. They see something unique. But yet now we hear, now they're listening to us talk about all of our friends, all of our families daily wrestle with this temptation to potentially leave. Mm-hmm. What would you say? I mean, there's no place that people, I say, I love Hawaii. I tell my friends, I love Hawaii like you love your mother. And they don't understand that. I love Hawaii like Hawaii is a person.
Mm. That's a beautiful expression. You know, aloha, something that when we first came here in 81, we immediately received that in our spirit and our hearts. It is beautiful. And actually, over the last couple of years, with all things COVID, with the tyranny and the mandates here in Hawaii, that love, that sharing, that willingness to wave somebody in at traffic or have somebody come across the sidelines or get out and help somebody just because it was there, just because it was present, you recognize it. That unique quality, and it's not unique just to Hawaii, but it's much more prevalent here. That has been under pressure. You know, anxiety and tyranny and the lack of liberty drives joy from anything, anybody, any created being. You can take the most amazing beast in the world and put them in a cage, and soon they're nothing that they used to be. Take a lion. You go to the zoo, you look at a lion in the zoo. It's nothing that is created to be, the glory and the roar. Mm. And it's the same with humanity. People under tyranny over a season, they have a very difficult time maintaining that joy, the invitation of life, the willingness to give yourself, not to mention when we have our government here telling us to separate, not to connect, wear a mask, live in fear, live under tyranny. These are the things that crush humanity. They've always crushed humanity. That's what the scripture says. When bad government is in the head, the people will groan or they will suffer. And so people now are trying to come out. They're, you know, COVID, the mandates, they're essentially over for the season. They're trying to come back into the field of life. And that's our call. The call, part of the call for our campaign is to get people to come back out of the stands and get back into the field of life. This is what we long for, that people begin to participate, not just in voting. Yeah, voting makes a big difference, but come back into life.
That's really powerful because you can see it, that the way you said, trying to. Yeah. I said to my wife the first week here, I said, you can tell people aren't really used to working.
That's right.
They're awkward. The hospitality in our hospitality industry seems a bit off, and there's fear. My hobby's Muay Thai, and I came out of this my Muay Thai gym, and there was a father and a son wearing masks, and they were standing by the stairs, and I bolted up the stairs with my bag, and they both were talking, and then they noticed me, and then they looked that I didn't have a mask, and they leapt away from me.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, they're still afraid.
They're still afraid.
And this is sorrowful. I see children walking down the street in Waikiki, local kids, still wearing their masks.
That's right.
They've been trained to be afraid.
Yeah, my friend was at church yesterday with this family, and the kids don't wear the mask. They go to church. They're in church, and I think a 5 or 6-year-old boy said, "Dad, I need my mask." And the dad was like, "Why do we need a mask?" "Well, there's my teacher.
Oh.
There's my classroom teacher. I have to put my mask on."
Oh no!
So this inculcation, this plan to put masks on our kids, honestly, Jason, I don't really understand exactly what the objective is. I mean, I know that tyranny and power are the under it all, but for a teacher to require a student to wear a mask that restrains their ability to breathe, to learn, to live, to love, that kind of logic, that at that level, it's really hard to imagine.
You know, there's this great book called Blink by Malcolm Gladwell. And in it, he talks about how, you know, in these self-help books and business books, they teach us how to, like, look them in the eye and shake their hand. And that's how you win someone's confidence. And what they discovered through studies is that's not how you win people's trust. It's through these micro movements that all over the face, how they become flush,
that's
and
right.
where they tense and where they relax. The brain knows that.
Yeah.
It's how we communicate with each other. And so when children are masked up, they're missing out on all of these cues on just how we relate to one another. And so all of that's gone. It's very strange. You know, I came back last year and it was very airy because I live in a part of Texas that they did 14 days to flatten the curve. And they're like, "We gave you that."
There you go.
And that's been it.
What a concept.
No masks, no nothing.
Yep.
And so coming back last year, a friend of mine who I love, and we worked together at Chuck's Steakhouse right below us. And he was the most lively guy, an entrepreneur, and all kinds of businesses. He had flown to Rome. He said I was such a good friend to him. My wife and I got married in Rome, and he showed up in Rome and said, "I'm going to make you the most beautiful wedding video ever."
Awesome.
Yeah.
And that was good.
He leapt to his death in Waikiki last year because he was a guy that had struggled with mental illness, but he was a warm, loving guy, always on the street, coming up with business ideas. Everyone in Waikiki knew who he was, and he brought joy to everyone. He was a stand-up comedian. He sold hot dogs outside of nightclubs. You know, everything guys try to do to survive in Hawaii. Waikiki,
right.
While he's working. And I was walking down the street, and a friend of mine who was my roommate in college, who's HPD, saw me, and he pulled over. He didn't even know I'd left. He goes, "Hey, bro, get in the car." Well, you know, I was arrested famously at the Reopen Hawaii, and then
right.
I said to him, "Not again,
no,
bro.
I'm
not getting in your car."
Not
he laughed. In. He goes, "No, get in the front seat this time." And we were driving around. He didn't know I had moved. And I said, "Oh, I moved to Tabin in Texas for almost a year now." He said, "What are you doing back?" I said, "My friend committed suicide." He goes, "Bro, we're having so many jumpers. So many jumps, so many suicides." But of course, the media shouldn't and doesn't report on the number of suicides. But we have a crisis in Hawaii right now.
Yeah, you know, I think over a season, it's like you back a bear into the closet. At some point, the anxiety and the pressure starts to show up in everywhere, you know, whether it's at work or in your relationships, even in the internal conversation in your mind. Am I making the right choices? Am I doing the right thing? Is there any hope? And as soon as you start having that conversation, then there's only, you know, bad choices in front of you. You start thinking about those in those terms. And so, you know, I actually am not aware of the rate that you're talking about. But I know that people live in despair all around, all the time. And many people are leaving here. They've decided, I've lived here my entire life. I was born here. And they're on Zillow. They're looking all across the nation, a place where they can go without tyranny, a place that they can live without spending 1.1, 1.3 for a 1,500 square foot house. You know,
a starter home in Hawaii is $1.2 million.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's the median price. Median price in Hawaii is $1.2 million. And so people look at that and they're like, will we ever be able to go to
dinner? And wages are the lowest in the country, right? Is that correct?
I mean, the comparison between, you know, being able to survive and pay your bills, to thrive, those are not the days that we're living in now. This is actually one of the reasons that we're running for governor. And all of this is driven by bad policy. People don't really realize that policy comes through these departments, and these departments have now been weaponized. They make their own fees. They have their own regulations. And then there's these tentacles that move between these agencies. These agencies are crushing the people of Hawaii. So you have no housing. You have no industry here. You have no housing. You have the highest taxes in the nation. You have the lowest performance in the school in the nation. We lead Hawaii in a lot of the wrong ways. So
we should be the wealthiest polity in the world per capita.
That's right. That's actually very true. I've heard that a number of times. The fact that we don't have industry here, you know what our largest export is? Scrap metal. Number two is scrap airplane parts. We produce nothing here. So we're an import state. We're a service sector. So when our kids go to school.
We were a net ag exporter in the early 90s.
That's right. We were a robust ag economy. It's been crushed. It's been put out of the marketplace by DLNR. So these kinds of policies are what are crushing the people, and they don't see a hope. They don't, and that's what they're looking for. Even when we saw the thing the other morning at the coalition, when Steve got up, there was tears in the room, tears of joy, but there's tears of mourning. People are sad because their families are leaving. This is not Pono. This is not right. We should not have to experience that.
Well, you know, when I moved here in '89. And like you said, I was just welcomed. I was like a feral cat, you know, that people pitied.
And take him under my wing.
Yeah, exactly. And I was really nurtured and cared for. And that's why I say I love Hawaii. Like I love a mother. But I remember going to like the farm fair. The farm fair was the biggest thing of the year because the ag industry, we were number one. I remember being shocked. Tourism is not number one industry. You know, I know. Ag is number one. And then the ag industry was swept away. Just as those immigrants that were exploited, let's be honest, yeah. The Filipinos and the Portuguese and the Okinawans, they were brought here and exploited and profited from. Just as their children and grandchildren were moving into management positions, had an industry that was becoming theirs, it was taken from them. Mm-hmm. Then now all the local hotels, I don't know, is Outrigger still locally owned?
There's very few that are locally owned.
And so what happens? You work for Marriott. You work for any of these big chains, the only way you go up is to go out.
Yeah, that's right.
And so if you want any, there's no opportunity for middle class in this community anymore.
Yeah. It does not have to be that way. I mean, the fact that we don't have those industries anymore. I mean, I remember going metal, gold, dairy, poultry.
What was the name of the cow?
Ah, oh. Good question.
Oh, I forget her name. Betsy.
But certainly, they were iconic. And the reason they were iconic is because they served all of the people. Everybody knew. Those industries are gone. People don't really realize this, that we are literally 2 weeks away from famine here. If something happens, if we have a massive storm, if there's some kind of a real true global supply chain that involves food, Hawaii is in a position, it is not prepared. It is not ready to sustain itself. Even in the basics, can we eat? So, you know, these people are coming. People are actually becoming aware of this, not just the few that were preppers and always, they've always been paying attention, but the general public realizes that we're in a very precarious position because we have no local ag industry. It's
furthest place in the world from any other place in the world.
Yeah.
That imports 90% of it, 95% of its food.
Yeah.
To be
everything.
For an island to be food independent, it needs to produce 95% of its own food. Mm-hmm. We went from this is the richest soil on earth. The community, the local community, was knit together through agriculture. And
that was the hope.
You rip that away. Mm-hmm. And now I'm not going to take this opportunity to lobby you, but you will be getting in your email box. I started an organization called HawaiiFoodSecurity.com.
Love it.
And we have a plan mm-hmm. to reboot Hawaii's ag industry to get to 90%.
Awesome.
And but this is something people don't think about. And I have believed in the longest time one of the greatest tragedies of the 21st century. And I live and work around famine and war and genocide and democide. That's my job. And I have always feared that the greatest famine in the 21st century will be in the Hawaiian Islands. And so this, again, is something that people need to take seriously. A Pacific war, a really serious pandemic, and there will be hunger. And in fact, there was during this past pandemic. There were elderly who were afraid to leave their homes that when my friend's organization, Dallas Carter, Kapuna Needs, would find famished elderly afraid to leave their house. That's they didn't know how to use Uber Eats. They didn't know. They had no one to call. They would show up. They showed up at a house in Diamond Head. This woman was dying of hunger when they met her. They brought her food, and she was so grateful that she handed them a $10,000 check. She was not a poor woman,
yeah,
but she was elderly and scared and isolated and was starving to death in the shadow of Diamond Head in a mansion. Doesn't sound real, but it's real.
You know, I sat outside a Honda dealership waiting for my car to get my safety check done, talking to this young lady who served the kapuna. It was her job to go into these high-rise buildings and serve the kapuna. She worked for the state. In the middle of COVID, the state completely cut her funds, left the kapuna without resources and without the ability to connect, to actually have somebody come and serve them. These were cuts made in the middle of all this glut of COVID money coming in the Department of Health. Not to mention homelessness was cut in the middle of this. When $1 billion came into Hawaii through COVID resources, they've cut social services for the people that are most vulnerable. And these realities shocked people. These are people's aunties and uncles. These are not just isolated individual people who are not connected. They suffer the most, but it's across the board. Molokai, we were just on Molokai the other day. Sat with a lady in Molokai. You know what she's afraid of? She's afraid of getting sick because there's no kapuna care on Molokai, none. And so if she gets sick, it's off to Maui, or if she's really sick, it's off to Honolulu. Then there's no transportation pieces. So this idea, this scarcity mentality that has been brought about by our government policy has to change. There's enough. There's enough. God is more than enough. His abundance provides for more than enough. It's those who exercise the allocation of that abundance. This is where the problem is. We need people who actually understand that the people should be first, and the people's resources should be allocated accordingly.
Yeah, and you had asked earlier, you know, what would make a teacher make a child wear a mask and just be able to tolerate it, or these bureaucrats who are to care for the elderly stand by as funding is being cut. The great Jewish German political philosopher Hannah Arendt, covering the Eichmann trial, she said that, you know, it was very controversial. She said, Eichmann's not a monster. It's worse than that. He was banal. It's the banality of evil, the thoughtlessness of evil. Looking to your left, looking to your right, no one's doing anything. I'm afraid to do anything too. I'll go along to get along.
Tacit consent.
And because I want to get to this, because there are consequences in Hawaii, serious consequences for standing up. I was arrested, of course, and never charged, put on the newspaper to be shamed. Mm. My wife was nose to nose with me in the photograph as I was being handcuffed, and they laser cut her out because they couldn't have my wife in a photo because the idea, you know, the image they were trying to... Right. To project, and they couldn't have my wife in the photo. That would ruin what they were trying to say in that photograph. It takes real courage to stand up.
Yeah.
But this should be the wealthiest polity in the world. There is no reason why people's children and grandchildren have to go to the mainland. But they're afraid. What would you say to people listening? I have so many people say to me, oh, I'm a Republican, but I have to give money to Democrat candidates. I can't tell anyone. I can't tell anyone. I have to vote this way. I have to give money that way. I'm afraid. Do you hear that from folks?
I do hear that. And, you know, the metaphor is true. Over the last couple of years, my wife and I, Kim and I, and a number of others, we found...
You're a local businessman.
Yeah, I'm a local businessman. But then that stand in Aloha Freedom Coalition in Waikiki, in Honolulu, for the people's liberty, we ran into all kinds of opposition. And people tell me all the time, I saw you with the mayor. I saw you talking to the mayor. I saw you screaming in the street. There's a lot of fodder out there. These images are going to be before me in the campaign. I'm certain of it. But I will defend it because it was about liberty. There's no fear when the truth is on your side. You must stand up the truth. And there are a lot of people in my industry. I call people as a governor candidate. One of the things that I have to do is raise money. So I call friends. I say, hey, listen, I'm running for governor. Yeah. Did you hear? I heard this. This is fantastic. I said, well, you donate to the campaign. Well, you know, the union kind of told me, and I told me who I need to donate to. I'm having a really hard time donating to you because it's public information. So the twisting of the arm, the long knife, is always out in Hawaii. Those who have power want to maintain power. Those who long for more power lobby for more power. And the people who suffer, it's the citizens of Hawaii. So it is not an accident. It is not isolated. It's systemic. The fact that we have these organizations, whether they're unions or other political organizations, legislators, all of these folks want to maintain power. And at the end of the day, each man, and my obviously confess, I'm my greatest idol. I would prefer to be right. I'd prefer that. But to exercise discipline and set that aside and be for the other is the issue. Self-discipline, self-government, being for the other person. But others will not restrain.
Yeah, obviously
that.
You were out there. Yeah. You're a local businessman. You could have weathered this.
Yeah, I could have.
You guys could have said, this is great. Yeah. This is a great little pause. We can have family time. There was ways for you to weather it.
Yeah.
You were out there because you knew there were people being crushed.
Yeah, my kids. When my grandkids decided to leave Hawaii, our daughters decided to leave Hawaii.
That was your inciting incident.
You're right. I said, I'm 62. I can eat peanut butter. I can get through. But not my grandkids. They will not. My grandkids will not grow up in a society where they don't have liberty and freedom. And that piece, liberty and freedom, is vital for a society, for health, for wholeness, for abundance. And without liberty, without freedom, without clarity, that's why I will stand. That's why God is saying we need righteous leadership in government at the head, because it will set the tone for all government and begin to redirect the policies that actually impact the lives of the people. This is the issue that's before us. Bad policy from bad government leaders.
And it's devastating the culture. It's changing it. You know, when I first moved here, I used to have to go to these parties. I was married at 18. Didn't last through my mid-20s. Surprise. Still very good friends with my ex-wife and her family. I think my old in-laws love me more than my new in-laws. My new in-laws love me too, but very close with my ex-wife's family, and their local Filipino came here, worked in the plantations, and every weekend, Friday and Saturday, huge banquets.
Yeah.
You remember those days?
Yeah.
And I asked my friends, what happened to those? And they're like, how can we do that anymore when everyone's working 80 hours a week? This changes things. You know, it changes things. Like they don't do ballroom dancing in the local high schools anymore after school, and you don't have the festivals anymore because people are being crushed. Yet they're being crushed so that the fear is so high that they're afraid to do anything to push back.
Well, you know, the strategy is, you know, do this because you're loving your neighbor. Isolate.
They use our virtue against us.
Isolate. Take a shot because it's a loving thing, as though there's no consequences. In reality, the consequences have been devastating, not just here locally, but globally. The fact that there's so much division in our country, this divisive behavior is between families. People don't get to go to Thanksgiving with their family. My sister couldn't see her grandbaby because of that. You can't see your grandbaby. You haven't taken the shot. This kind of fear-based policies, these agendas that are designed to tear down the family values, the social fabric of our society, they're attacking the family, and they're starting with the kids. And so this is not an accident.
It makes no sense that the last people in Hawaii have to wear masks are children.
Right.
It's backwards.
The most sun. We have the most, we have, you know, we have sun 300 days a year, 330 days a year. This is vitamin D on steroids. The fact that we're supposed to go outside and our natural immunity, this is the deal. Kids, human beings, 99.5% natural immunity against the shot. That our government doesn't just recognize simple therapeutics, healthy eating, exercise, community, socialize, sleep habits. These are the kinds of things that make for a healthy person, not protocols. Not shots, not division, not separation, not
fear,
masks,
loneliness,
all of these things,
isolation. There was a child, I shouldn't even really say, I'm not going to say where in Oahu, there was a child, a middle schooler, who committed suicide during the second shutdown and left a note saying, I miss my friends. Mm. And, you know, of course, they don't cover that in the news. But what that is that signals to us that there's loneliness. Our children were lonely.
I recently read, only a couple of days ago, they had a spot from a young man. I believe he was eighth grade. He said, don't you guys get it? I'm going to summarize. Don't you guys get it? All we really want to do is be talked to. Our kids, this generation, are being raised by their phones. You go to a restaurant, every person in the family is on their phone having a different conversation. They're not having a conversation face-to-face. They're not engaged in humanity. There's no social building. There's no way to communicate. And then we wonder what happens when stress comes into the person's life. They have no way. They have no one to talk to. They only have the phone. Am I against the phone? I have some issues with the phone, as you can tell. Because it's replacing what's most vital, relationship.
When I came here, you know what I did? Is my job is overwhelming, as you can imagine, and a lot of the folks that are communicating with me deserve not to be ignored, but my family deserves some time too.
That's right.
So I bought a flip phone. I bought a flip phone, and I said to my wife and kids, this phone, only you guys are going to have it. And this is what's going, my work phone is going to stay in the hotel, and I will have 1 hour in the morning and 1 hour in the evening to look at it. And the rest of the time, I will have this flip phone in my pocket because I can't discipline myself. If I'm getting a WhatsApp or Signal message from Kabul, like, I'm going to take it. Mm-hmm. And but my family hasn't had me for the past year. And I said, you're going to get me for the next couple of weeks. The phone is a great distraction. The lack of Eros. You know what I miss? Watching kids steal trays from McDonald's. You remember those days? They'll steal the trays. Just, you'd see all these kids walking down Waikiki barefoot with trays.
Yeah.
Because they're going to use the McDonald's trays to body surf.
Right.
And then at the end of the day, they'll return.
I don't know about the return part.
Oh, okay. I was maybe exaggerating there. I was trying to cover for the kids. Yeah. You're right. Good. You called me on that. And I, you know what? Also, there's a TV show we watched last night. I'm shooting a film in Hawaii. It's called Magi's Gifts and Nostalgia Shop, and I rewrote O. Henry's Gift of the Magi around two Micronesian tweens, and I really wanted to tell a story of Eros and love, because I don't think young people today even get Eros. Mm. These are the things that upset me.
Yeah.
You know, young kids today don't know what it's like to be 15 years old and not being able to eat and have to listen to Air Supply to go to sleep because you had your heart broke. You know, they don't know what it's like to go to the skating rink and
you're dating yourself.
Be so excited that, you know, now it's time for the slow skate. And, yeah. You know, and then okay. Little Susie's like, will you skate with me?
Yeah.
They're being robbed of Eros,
yeah.
Family,
that's
love,
right.
Community, all the things that make life worth living. Mm-hmm. And it's the failure of government. And how it's responded. But I think no place has been more hurt. I think California and Hawaii should be the two wealthiest polities in the world, and they're being ground into dust.
Yeah. You know, that actually government can support the family. Really, you're talking about the family structure, yeah. The breakdown of the family structure, the lack of connectedness, the reality, the intimacy, the conversations, the good and the bad, the difficult, the joyous. You know, going to the park with your kids, going to the basketball game, doing simple things, going for a hike. These are beautiful things. These are the things that we treasure. When we get at the end of our days, we will not look back and say, wow, I'm sure glad I had that iPhone 12. No. That was awesome. But we'll look back for it and we'll look back in the memory banks for those walks on the beach, for those moments. You know, even if it's, you know, you're having breakfast with your grandkids. They become more treasured as they get a little older, but we miss them in the busyness and the urgency of trying to survive, that we would actually focus and reprioritize that. That's really a call. And that's part of government's responsibility, the fact that government doesn't make it possible for the people to live in grace, not to have to work two jobs, not to have to worry about, you know, the taxes and the property taxes and, you know, fees and all of these things. These are policy issues. These are priority issues. So you see, you know, we see everything being attacked to underwrite the size of government, the nature of government, and government must shrink. You know, Prager said, "The bigger the government, the smaller the citizen." We want the
Dennis
government.
Dennis Prager, something else.
We want the government out of the way. Government should make equal justice and a safe place to live, and then get out of the people's way and let them live.
The bigger the government's become in Hawaii. Oh, Bear Wozniak, surf legend, great hero, Bear Wozniak. He was going to be here. I was going to try to interview him and then you together. But he just had a hip. He hurt his hip surfing. He does tandem surfing. Oh. 68 years old, had his wife over his shoulder, much younger than him.
He's a bull.
And he is a bull. And the bear. That's why they call him Bear.
The bear.
But he detached his hip muscle. He had to get it reattached yesterday. I said, I may be having the next governor. He was keeping me on late. I said, I can't be late. We're going to have to lobby this guy in a year. You know, we need to be good on good terms with this guy. I got to get downstairs, Bear. He's going
out. Have integrity, my friend.
I said, Bear, I got to get downstairs so I can lobby this guy. I said, Bear, what's one question you want me to ask Gary? And he said, Waikiki is being terrorized not by the homeless, but by thugs that are homeless. Yeah. Not by the mentally ill, not by the broken and the sick, but there are just roving thugs that choose to live on the street and are terrorizing people. He said, ask him what his plan to make Waikiki safe for its residents. And also for, I mean, look, the last industry they've let us have is tourism. So what would be your plan to make Hawaii safe?
You know, that's such a relevant question. Yesterday, we were at a little coffee shop on Ke'awuku. And we're just talking, he just opened this business. And it's so good. I told him, I just said, great job. I'm glad to see us, you know, a local person open the local business. His, you know what we want to talk about? People smashing and grabbing in his neighborhood. These groups, these organized groups, it's organized crime. You can call them thugs, whatever you want. They're organized. They think they work together like a pack. They roll up on a car. They see a bag in the car. One guy smashes the window, tosses it to a guy on a bike. He hands it to a car, and on they go. And the police can do nothing. What we will do in this administration, well, we will actually have an attorney general that will prosecute law. He will actually. We want him elected by the people, first of all. The fact that our attorney general is nominated and selected by the governor.
So you're running for governor, but you're saying you don't want that power. It's the people's response.
It's the people's power. The people should elect the attorney general. They should elect the ethics commission. They should elect the sheriff. They should elect all types of policies, positions that are related to government. And so the governor must demand this attorney general actually prosecute. I mean, I was glad to see that Governor Ige vetoed the bail law yesterday, but it still doesn't matter. They don't prosecute anybody. So the prosecutor's office must prosecute. And these people that are coming here, they aren't just thugs. They're just bullies. This is a mob mentality, and it's coming from the mainland. I hate to say it, but it's true. They come here. If they don't have it, they think they should have it, and they just take it. So there must be actual law. There must be consequences.
And they just roam like you can. They just roam. Very aggressive.
They're very aggressive. They're very intimidating. They approach people on the street. You know, it's no longer is it panhandling. It's more like, I'm taking your money. Don't you get it?
Yeah, my son, we were going to Mass the other day, and this guy got really aggressive to my son. He doesn't look like me. So then I upped the ante on this guy and said some things that my son looked at me and said, Dad, was that the Christian way to respond to this guy? I said, son, I didn't do that for you, and I didn't do that because my pride was hurt that he threatened my son. I did that for the next family that's walking down or the young woman who's walking down with her daughter that he may think twice about threatening a child.
Yeah.
And I lived in Waikiki for 12 years. This is not the Waikiki I remember. I remember the safest block in a big city on the planet Earth. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned starting the thing, the Aloha Spirit. It's under pressure. It's under pressure because these forces are now roaming the streets. And it's destroying everything. This used to be a family destination vacation. It's becoming so expensive here that now it's the elite can only come here. And this is destroying, you know, the sense of Aloha, the idea that there's family, that it is safe on the streets. I don't know what the temperature is out there if I'm from Wisconsin or Florida or Louisiana. I don't know what they're hearing over there. But I can tell you these polls taken when you come in, you know, your information that you receive, you get from the airline, they should take a poll going out.
I can tell you what they're hearing. It's not good. Mm. It's being tarnished.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard so many people say, oh, it's becoming a very violent, dangerous place, or they don't want us to visit there. And this is the message that people are receiving.
Well, you know, the pressure there. The desire to bring more and more and more tourism here is driven by the fact that we have no local industry. There's no other tax base. There's no other revenue stream for the for the state to continue to operate. So what do? They keep promoting tourism. It's pushing pre-mandate levels. We're getting 6, 7, 8 million people here a year. All the infrastructure, everything is taxed. There's only so much. There's only so much aina here. There's only so much water. There's only so much space. And the local native Hawaiian people, they're getting crushed.
I've never seen Waikiki this busy. Yeah. And the Japanese aren't even here yet.
They're not even here. Yeah, there's no Japanese here.
But you know what's interesting? My wife pointed this out. She said, I've never seen Waikiki so busy. But it doesn't seem like they're going into the businesses.
No, the businesses are not making money.
We went to Ala Moana. She goes, I've never seen Ala Moana so empty. How is it that Waikiki's never been so busy, but then Ala Moana, this big shopping mall that's here, I think it's the largest outdoor shopping plaza in the world. My wife's like, how come it's empty? I said, well, I think you said it, they're not families anymore. It's upscale folks, and upscale folks aren't coming here to like walk around shopping malls.
Right.
I remember when you said there'd be families here and you'd see mom, dad, kids and the floaties walking down this beach. You don't see that anymore.
Not so
you used
much.
To see youth groups and you'd see high school bands and cheerleader groups, and you don't see that anymore.
Well, even when you go into like the large department stores, whether it's Neiman or Bloomingdale's, they're empty. It's like shocking. You know that they're not going to be around much longer. And a lot of it is Amazon. We have an online lifestyle. I don't know how these bricks and mortar stores actually survive in that marketplace anyway, but the fact that the Japanese tourists and the other tourists from Asia are not here, those large stores depended upon those dollars. That if they survive, I'll actually be surprised. So, but we need a breath of fresh air. That's what we need. There's some despair that's coming up inside of me right now. And I'm thinking, no, there is not despair, because what we're offering is hope.
Roe v. Wade overturning.
That's right.
Right. That just gives us hope. And the one thing I would say is I believe that Hawaii can be and should be the most thriving, healthy polity on the planet Earth. You're running. We know that you represent the values of the people of Hawaii, but they're afraid to elect someone. Maybe this is a comprehensive question, but I want people who are listening from Chinese-occupied East Turkestan, people are listening in refugee camps in the United Arab Emirates, and people are listening around the world. There's the struggle we all have to fighting for the common good and advancing our self-interest. You're running for governor. When you and your wife sat down and tried to make this decision, or even before that, when you said, we're going to stand up and fight for freedom for the people of Hawaii, how did you do the calculus of my personal interest versus the interest of my community? Because that's what we need people. Everyone who is thinking of voting for you or donate needs, they don't have even the courage to donate. By the way, they don't even have the courage to donate for you, but you then had the courage to run. So how do we say to everyone, listen, if we all have courage together, we win.
That's right.
And it doesn't take courage eventually. So what was the calculus that you did? Because everyone listening, we all do this, right? We're like, Should I stand up for the common good? Should I help that young woman being accosted across the street that comes at risk? Or we all have to make these decisions all the time. When you and your wife sat down and made this decision to stand up and fight, how did you do that math in your mind? You're successful. You didn't need to do this. You could have rode this out. But you chose to stand up and fight, and you're continuing the fight by running for governor. How did you work that out in your mind?
It wasn't as sophisticated as you think, I can assure you. Actually, people started telling me a year and a half ago, you should run. You need to run. You need to run for governor. And honestly, I just dismissed it outright as fantasy. I was in the middle of construction. We were working hard. I said, this is crazy. But honestly, for me to run, it's more of active obedience. God took me to the ground once, and I was like, it was shocking. I was like, what was that? I didn't even tell Kim, my wife. Happened again, and I told her, I said, I don't know what's going on, but this has happened twice now. And my sense is in my spirit that what was being said by these people around the state was connected with what was going on in these moments with the Lord. It happened a third time, and I knew at that point that this was an issue of obedience.
Whoa.
The next time I sought the Lord.
You don't want to end up in the belly of a whale.
No. When he calls and he makes it clear, you choose to obey or you don't. And so ultimately that morning on a Saturday morning, I said, yes, Lord, if that's what you want, I'll do this. I went in the house. I told Kim, I said, this is what I think the Lord is saying. I'm thinking I'm looking for a back door.
Oh, you're hoping she says no.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Subconsciously, maybe. I haven't actually figured that out.
Yeah.
But literally it was this organic. It was in the spirit. It wasn't in a calculus. It wasn't a political conversation. It wasn't what could be or couldn't be done. It was truly obedience. I came in and said, this is what he's saying. And she said, that's right. No fanfare, just a matter of fact, yeah, that's right. And then I asked the question. It's much what you asked. I said, are you willing to lose everything? Because if we make this run, we may lose everything. And she said, yes, I'm willing.
Praise God.
And then the second question was a follow-up question. I said, are you willing to lose everything and not win? Because this is the true question.
That is,
people will
risk. Wise wife.
The people will risk if they know they win in the end. But yeah. Risking without the knowledge of winning. So it made, at that moment, it wasn't even about the race. It was about obedience. It was about understanding that it's God who wants righteous government. That somebody must stand. Somebody must say, yes, I will stand. If this is what you're saying, I will stand. And this was the call. It really wasn't a strategic piece.
Like, and 62 is not the age you want to lose everything.
Well, no.
42.
But I know the King of Heaven.
42 is fine, right?
Yeah, 42.
42, you can lose everything.
Yeah, I tell the kids all the time, you're 30, go for it.
Yeah,
don't
exactly.
Hold back.
42, I'll lose everything.
That's right. You know, 62. I'm totally clear. I'm totally clear who my provision is.
Praise
I'm not
God.
Concerned. I'm not concerned about the circumstances. Other people join the race. Good. Let them join. Trump wants to join the race. Good. Let him run. I am running because I'm clear about why I'm running. I'm clear about who I'm running for. And this removes all the barriers. I don't have to worry about necessarily political party. Am I Republican? Absolutely. Am I running for the Democrats? Absolutely. Do they all need the grace of God, the abundance of his presence, his provision? Absolutely. So when we run, there's no restraint. I don't feel compelled.
Any of the Democrats that you're running against will benefit from you winning.
Absolutely. That's
their families, their children, their grandchildren will be able to live here.
That's exactly right.
If you win, Vicky Cayetano's great-grandchildren will live here.
They
if Vicky Cayetano is the next governor, her great-grandchildren
will
be working
here.
In a bar in Las Vegas.
That's exactly right. This is policy because it has to do with whom you serve.
You're running for her children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
Exactly right. Yeah, well said. So this is a run for the well-being of the state. You know, people ask, why are you running? I mean, what's the reason? I'm not running to be pastor of the state. I'm running to put principles in government, godly principles, because when they're in place, godly policy will follow. And when godly policy follows, people will live in abundance. This is how it is. This is reaping and sowing. This is so that people would understand that, they can get on board. This is grassroots. We're not a well-funded campaign. You can go to our website, Gary Cordery for Governor.
Yeah, I was going to ask
shameless
you.
Shameless plug.
No, Gary Cordery for Governor.com. Check it out.
Yeah, check it
can
out.
Can people from around the world donate?
Absolutely. You know, you have to, so go online. Do it online. There's a donate page there. This is part of the run. You know, there's rules and regulations.
Yeah.
You know, campaign finance, but we understand those. We abide by those. But we need people to step up. It's like I said earlier, people must come out of the stands and get onto the field. They have to stop living in fear. People in Hawaii don't vote. The reason they don't vote is they don't think their vote matters. And quite frankly, over the last
we have the lowest voter turnout in the country.
Less than 50% will vote.
That's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And yet they're being crushed. The idea that there's not a connection in their minds between who they vote for.
Because they know it doesn't matter.
They think it doesn't matter. It's corruption.
It hasn't mattered, to be honest.
That's
they haven't been given a real choice.
Yeah.
And now they have a real choice. This is maybe my last question. How old were you when you moved here to Hawaii?
Good question. 21.
You're 21.
22.
So you lived here most of your life.
Yeah.
81. You know, Hawaii is a state that's very unique, and you move here at 21, you're still kind of seen. And I tell people, I love Hawaii more because I wasn't born here. I'm like the Hanai son. Do you think that moving here at 21 has given you sort of a greater sense of responsibility to be a service to your neighbors?
I think being here this long and having our kids born here and go to school here and having our grandkids born here, I think you have an awe and a wonder about the grace that's here.
Yeah.
And to see it slip away is heartbreaking. To see even tangibly families move away. But the grace of Aloha.
That have been here for generations and generations.
Many people, many close friends, they've just left. The unbearable nature of government here, the cost of living and all that goes with that, that breaks my heart. And what breaks my heart is it doesn't have to be this way. If people just actually considered what was possible, that hope. When we decided to run, we made a declaration at an AFC general meeting. We were overwhelmed. There was maybe 300 to 500 people there.
Unbelievable.
They stood up and they were weeping and crying. And we had no idea that this was going to be the response. And several people have told us, we were leaving Hawaii. But since
you're running,
we're staying. This is hope. Hope. This is what people long for. Without a vision, people perish. But with hope, they'll stand, they'll fight, they'll persevere. The longing for wholeness, for the Aloha spirit, for family, for all that you've expressed in this, in our time together, it can come back. And it will come back if we make right choices.
Well, I you give me hope. And I'm so grateful that you're running for office. And, you know, where I live in Texas, I see new Hawaii license plates every week. And we were there for a couple of months. We threw a party, and our neighbors came up to us and said, you make us feel bad about ourselves. We lived here our whole life, and we don't have as many friends here as you do. Huh. You know, we see your parties, and there's always cars out in front of your house. And I said, yeah, but do you notice something about our house, too? Do you notice all the slippers in front of our door?
That's right.
My wife gets so mad. Like, we need to conform to the standards of the community. I'm like, no, we don't.
No, we don't.
And I said, all of those cars you saw?
Yeah.
All the people you see coming to our house, they're all from Hawaii. And we live in German Hill Country of Texas. It's become a place where everyone's coming, and more people are coming. It's very, in a way, it's a blessing for our children, because our children have their closest friends from Hawaii are now in our neighborhood.
That's so good.
And it's beautiful, but it's sorrowful.
Yeah.
And it's, our sushi place is Ohana Sushi. Our jujitsu school is Ohana Jujitsu. I mean, it's beautiful for us, and we're grateful for that. But it's also, it's quite sorrowful. So you're giving all of us hope. And I'm so grateful for you and for your courage. And I think just you running is a victory. Just you running is a victory. And I hope that people from Hawaii who are listening have the courage to vote their convictions. I hope they have the courage to do what is right for their posterity. And sometimes to do what is right for our posterity comes at great personal cost. I remember when I was like 35, I turned to my wife and said, from now on, everything I do is ordered to what is best for my great-grandchildren. I'm going to think, what decision would best benefit my children's grandchildren? That's what I'm going to do. And everyone on Oahu, no one on Oahu, at the rate we're going, will have great-grandchildren living on Oahu. That's the fact.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because that's what the scripture says. It says you leave an inheritance for your grandchildren, because it's very forward-looking. It's about God understanding legacy. It's about him understanding, establishing wholeness and godliness in a society. And it happens at the level of your grandchildren. You see your children. The fruit doesn't fall far from the tree, but it's in their grandchildren that legacy continues to go. So,
was a grandpa. Gary, all right. Thank you very much, brother.
What an honor. Thank you.
Any parting words?
No, I just want to say thank you, Jason. Good, it's so good to see you again. And we talked briefly a while ago, years ago. And then we had one of these a year ago as well.
That's right. We did. I do. Yeah.
So it's really a gift to be back on your program. I wish you the greatest success. I pray that God will just continue to pour you out in Texas, in Ukraine, Afghanistan, all of these places where you're doing such tremendous work. It makes a massive and a huge difference in the lives of people. And this is ultimately the target. It's not about policy. It's not about I did this or I did that. Is there healing? Is there hope? Is there restoration? Is there reconciliation? So that's what we long for. And I just hear that in your language and your work. So God bless you, man. It's awesome.
All right, Gary. Thank you, brother. All right, I'm going to land this plane. I want to thank everyone for listening to this special, this Hawaii special with the great Barry Wozniak and Gary Cordery. This episode, as always, has been brought to you by MyPillow.com. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and use the secret code Jones, and you get deep, deep discounts on all of MyPillow products. This episode is also being brought to you by Epic Times. Go to iReadEpic.com. Use the code Jason Jones, and you will get the best price for digital and print subscriptions. And as always, of course, this episode is being brought to you by the Vulnerable People Project, standing in solidarity with the most vulnerable people in the world during their most challenging times, from Afghanistan to Chinese-occupied East Turkestan and across Ukraine. We are there. Right now, we're the only organization operating in Afghanistan in the earthquake. We're already there on the ground, and thanks to your support, we're able to serve the people there. So go to thegreatcampaign.org. Become a monthly donor, and you too will be standing shoulder to shoulder with the most vulnerable people on earth. Until next time, Jason Jones Show. Aloha.
Aloha.
This has been the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media.